Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me is my wonderfully amped and excited and electrifying co-host, Mr. Chad Riley.
That's right, I'm here. I'm tired.
He's
but
here.
I'm here.
He is here. He is ready. We have an exciting show in store for you today because we're going to be talking about holiday films. Not just holiday films, but what makes a holiday film? We're going to go deep into the science of that and maybe learn a few things today. What
maybe.
Do you think?
I mean, I make no guarantees, but it's possible.
It's possible.
Is our entire reason for being here.
True. The Filmlosophers are here to serve. Also, The Filmlosophers is presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live at VGB Studios, which means it's always the most wonderful time of the year as far as we're concerned.
Wow, that's nice.
We try. If you're feeling generous this holiday season, take a minute to subscribe to the Filmlosophers podcast on your favorite platforms. New episodes are available every week on Player FM, Google Play, iTunes, Audioboom, Libsyn, and Stitcher. If once a week simply isn't enough for you, class is always in session on social media. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 to connect with other Filmlosophy fans and discuss movie news all week long. Finally, for more episodes and access to other VGB Studio Network podcasts, such as Video Game Bang and Me, Mike, Self, and I. Right? That was Me, Mike, Self, and I.
You said it right.
Sweet. Visit VGBstudios.com. Like I said, we got a great show in store for you. And you know, we're really pumped. It's the holiday season.
We're officially in December.
We are officially in December. We are well into Oscar season. And we're excited. I'm stoked. Yeah!
You have enough energy for both of us, so I'm just going to snooze.
Well,
is that okay?
I hope you don't snooze too much because we got some movie news to go on before we continue.
All right, I'll stay up for a little while.
Just a little while. Like, you don't even have to be totally coherent. Just enough to where we can continue somewhat a conversation. As long as you can do the back from my forth, you know, back and forth, then we're good.
Okay.
All right. As we hit up some movie news, at the top of our list, we got some awesome trailer overloading here. So trailers,
so many trailers.
Seriously, trailers are just the best thing. In my opinion, I love a good trailer.
I love a good trailer more than a bad movie.
It's true. That's very true. Trailers, and by the way, we're not talking about like trailers that you hitch on the back of your truck or anything like that. We're talking about movie trailers, folks. This is a movie podcast.
They know this.
Get with it.
They're film loss of fans.
I love the fact that they're like a sneak peek into what we can expect to see next year in the theaters. Now, like Chad said, sometimes the film doesn't always live up to the hype of the trailer, and sadly, it's happened more times than most. There are at least a handful I could think of right off the bat that I'm like, okay, the trailer was cool. Let's go check out the film. You check out the film, and it's like, boo.
Yeah, they shouldn't have even spent money on making a trailer for that movie.
Or they could have just left the trailer and then, you know, let people come to the theater to see that.
Yeah, that, just play it on a loop for an hour and a half.
But we've had some incredible teasers and trailers in the last week, and even some that we failed to mention the week before. And I have to say, these trailers are getting me amped up for what's to come. So, we're going to list out a couple of the trailers.
So, Eddie's amped about all these, and he's going to ask me in my tired state whether or not I'm amped about them also.
That's right.
This should be very interesting.
Exactly. So, we're gonna do this real quick. I know this is kind of a new thing, but we're going to talk about a little bit of a pass or fail system. We're the Filmlosophers. We pass people and we fail them.
Oh, so just like we do with the whole movie, when we do a whole movie review, now we're going to just do it with a trailer.
This is just a mini lightning round kind of quick deal with the trailers that have come out in the last week or so.
Fail. Sorry, I spoke too soon. Sorry.
So right off the top, Cars 3, which was released on the 21st of November. We didn't get a chance to talk about it here, but it looks, for me personally, I like the look of it. I like the way the CGI looks. I like the way of the animation. I'm sold on what's going to happen with Lightning McQueen in this movie. So it's a pass for me.
You know, I'm really on the fence on this one. I thought that the photorealism was really compelling. Mm-hmm. There was quite a bit near the beginning of the trailer that I if I didn't know what I was watching before I watched it, if I saw it in front of a movie in the theater and I didn't click on a link that said, here's the Cars teaser trailer,
yeah,
the Cars 3 teaser trailer. If I didn't know what it was and I was watching it, I would have thought, oh, is this like a Days of Thunder reboot? What is this? This is might be interesting. Once I learned that it was Cars 3, I have to say I wasn't very excited.
What?
It looks like a downer. Hopefully this is like, you know, it's kind of the up effect where you have mm-hmm. like this incredibly emotionally affecting story in the first 5 minutes that is a downer, but then you go up from there with the rest of the movie. Hopefully they're just showing us something that happens in the first 5 minutes of the movie
mm-hmm.
and it's up from there, because I don't know. Lightning McQueen, sure, it might be compelling from a character standpoint to have him go through rehab or whatever they're going to have him do mm-hmm. from, you know, in the trailer, it looks like he has a horrific crash and they're not sure whether he's going to make it or not. I'm not really, it's very serious. It feels very serious.
Oh yeah.
And you know, Pixar pulls stuff off all the time. It was a little too dark for being a Cars 3 film, given that the other films haven't been dark. I'm questioning whether it fits into the mold. So I would say it fails for me. I need to see more before I get excited.
All right. What's next over here on the list is the movie trailer that was released for Slight. Now, Slight is a movie about a little boy who is in love with magic, and he loves to do tricks, but then he finds that he actually has a power. And what I've been able to kind of compare it to is a mix between Chronicle meets Now You See Me. It looks interesting. It looks very thought-provoking because of the fact that I'm a big fan of magic, and I like to see people do tricks and things of that sort. And Now You See Me was a really good movie that I liked, the first one.
Yeah, the first one, yeah.
Yeah, not the second
not
one.
Not so much the second one. But the first one was pleasantly surprising.
And Chronicle is a film that was really good. I liked Chronicle, the one by, I believe it's Josh mm-hmm. Trank did that one. And that was incredible. So to see those kind of mesh together and become this type of film, it appears to me as that. Now, whatever comes out, like I said, that's next year. But from what I'm seeing, I give it a pass.
I have not seen the trailer, but this one I'm actually going to give a pass because superpowers and magic, done.
Done. Next on our list is the trailer for the adaptation of the novel The Shack, also titled The Shack. If you're unfamiliar, The Shack is a book about a man who loses his daughter while on a camping trip with his family and is distraught and so forth, and ends up getting a letter or getting invited back to the place where he had lost his daughter, and he reconnects with a lot of different things, and it's a very big spiritual journey type film. And it stars Sam Worthington, Octavia Spencer. I would say I don't know enough about the book per se because I didn't finish it. It looks compelling, but I'm gonna give it a fail for right now because of the fact that I don't know enough to say that it's not something that's already been done before. I don't want to go to the movie to cry just for the sake of crying. And as much as this film seems like it kind of hits on a lot of those levels that I can connect with, the trailer didn't give me enough, and I haven't read enough of the book to really say, okay, this connects with that and that connects with this.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The first thing that I thought when I was watching the trailer was it reminded me in many ways of What Dreams May Come. Just because you go from not an entirely monochromatic color palette, but a fairly monochromatic color palette into this like vivid full color, lush green forest environment. You know, they're definitely making a visual statement when he goes back to this area, this wilderness area, you know, for the second time. And I don't know anything about the book. I've never read it. I know it was very popular. I know there are a lot of people that did were impacted in many ways because it is an emotional story, from what I understand. It's hard for me to say. I don't want to give it a pass because I'm worried that in the same way that What Dreams May Come kind of, you know, gut punches you.
Yeah.
In ways you weren't expecting, you know, you're like, oh, look, he goes to heaven, and it's, you know, it's interesting and different, and it's recognizable, but not at the same time.
Yeah.
And all of that. But there are some serious gut punches in that movie.
Yeah.
That were not happy. They didn't make me happy. So I'm worried that this movie might have the same kind of effect where you've got this extremely intensely
beautiful, emotionally positive side, but then you have these gut punches that are just in there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm ready for that. So I'll give it a fail only because I need to see more in another trailer before I decide to go see the movie.
True. And just kind of quick side note, because you said it kind of reminded me of that movie, What Dreams May Come. The image that I got in my mind when I saw the trailer, it immediately took me back to the TV movie, The Five People We Meet in Heaven.
Sure. Yeah. The books are somewhat similar.
Are they?
In a way, from what I've heard. They came out around the same time, I think, too. I'm interested. I will say I am interested to see how Sam Worthington performs in the movie. It's not the type of role that I would expect from him. So it's compelling to me to see if he expresses a more dynamic range as a performer.
And honestly, let's just be frank. We haven't seen Sam Worthington do much of anything lately in a long while. So to see him kind of come out of the woodwork and have this be his like comeback.
You know,
role.
He was in that Hacksaw Ridge that we never did get around to seeing.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was in it.
Oh, he plays the general, or he plays the captain.
He's one of the military guys, yeah.
Next on our list is, of course, what kind of podcast would we be if we didn't mention Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
We'd be a bad one.
We'd be a horrible one.
We'd be a naughty. Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just got three words to say about this film. I am Groot.
I am Groot.
This trailer looks hilarious. I was worried that I was like, okay, there's... The difference between the first part and a sequel is you need to see some progression within the characters. You need to see some progression within mindsets and the dynamic of the team. And I was hoping, I'm like, all right, I used to be a big wrestling fan, so I'd love to see more of Dave Bautista really stretch out in this role. I'd like to see him really kind of explore more of like Drax's, you know, persona and see how it progressed, seeing as he's been around a bunch of these people. Not only did we get the incredible performance with Baby Groot in all the key roles, but Drax is just so hilarious. In that end sequence, it's so funny. Ha ha ha, you must be so embarrassed. She told everybody your deepest, darkest secret.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people focused on how Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one,
yeah,
really made Chris Pratt the it guy in Hollywood. Like, it really enhanced his star power, which is true. It did. One of the other things that people don't talk about as often is Dave Bautista,
mm-hmm.
who has done numerous other high-profile movies since Guardians of the Galaxy because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
It also elevated his stature within the Hollywood community at the same time, and it is refreshing to see him getting a little bit more of an expanded role to play in this outing. We haven't seen a whole lot from Gamora. We have not really seen how Yondu fits in with the team, or Nebula. Well, they've been shown in some of the preview art as kind of, it looks as though they're members of the Guardians now, or at some point in the movie. But thus far, we've only seen the original five that emerged from the first movie, and then Mantis shows up in this trailer as well. Mantis, in the comics, she's the Celestial Madonna. She's a precognitive, which means she can see the future, and she's also somewhat telepathic. So in the trailer, she's holding hands with Star-Lord and kind of blurts out the emotions that he's feeling, or the feelings that he's feeling, you know, in the moment when they're all sitting there, which means, you know, he has feelings for Gamora that haven't been expressed yet.
So I don't think there is enough there's not a large enough pass that I can give this film to tell you how much I'm excited for this film. Just off of this trailer, the teaser was good. It was interesting. You know, you get the little tidbits here and there, and even the funny part with Drax. You know, do you want a hug? And he's like, no, I'm good. He's like, I thought it was, and he gives him a hug. And that part was funny. And you got to find someone who's as miserable as you or whatever. And then, so I got to give this film a pass for me.
Oh, for sure. And I give it a pass. And as a trailer specifically, I give it a pass for two reasons. Baby Groot is the best. And I wish that he, she, or it did not have to grow up, but I'm sure that it will. Because it's the best. It's absolutely adorable, but also has kind of a grown-up sensibility to its humor as well.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, though, I will give this trailer a pass because between both the teaser and the main trailer that they've now released, you know nothing about the plot, or next to nothing about the plot. They don't need to give away the story details in order to hook you for this movie.
Yeah.
Because they're banking on the likability of their characters.
And they're doing an excellent job with it. I mean, I am darn well just ready to start standing in line for it now. So,
hear ye, hear ye. Eddie is already in line.
Tis true. The next film on our list is The Mummy, starring Tom Cruise, Russell Crowe, the woman who was in The Kingsman, Sophia Boti or something. The film is pretty much the reboot of the 1950s classic. It's Universal's attempt in recreating the monster, you know, group of people.
Yeah, they're kind of franchise. Starting a monster universe in the way that you have the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
yeah.
The DC Expanded Universe, or whatever they're calling it these days.
Yeah,
they're trying to make a universe of their own, and the superheroes are already taken, so they're making monsters.
Which makes sense, because Universal Studios owns the rights to the original, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Dracula, Frankenstein.
I mean, just visit Universal Studios during Halloween. I mean, what, Fright Nights or whatever they are. They've got them all there.
So the trailer was released this past Sunday, and I'm not sold on it. It seems to me like another Tom Cruise movie. And what I mean
and
by
not
that,
only that, oh, go ahead.
No, well, what I mean by that is it's one of those types of films where it looks like everything's going to be focused around Tom Cruise. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a featurette that comes out later on about how he did all his own stunts. I'm pretty sure that, you know, we're going to get the whole, you know, it seems like it's just another role that Tom Cruise is doing. And it's not even him as a character. I don't even need to know his name. I just know in the film, it's Tom Cruise meets the mummy, or Tom Cruise meets Frankenstein, or Tom Cruise, you know.
Well, it kind of lends itself to suggesting that perhaps Tom Cruise is the mummy the way that it ends. But
true.
I will add to what you're saying. Hmm. I also highly recommend failing this trailer. The trailer, not the movie necessarily. I do recommend failing the trailer, because not only does this look like just another Tom Cruise movie, this looks like just another Ethan Hunt movie. This is a Mission Impossible movie. Literally, the stunt that they show in this trailer is like, in some ways, it's the inside the plane version of the outside the plane stunt that we already saw in
Ghost Protocol,
Rogue Nation. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Literally, I'm sitting there watching the thing, and I'm looking at Tom Cruise and, you know, all the G-forces and everything, and I'm thinking is, I've seen this before. Literally, I've seen this before, except he was on the outside of the plane instead of the inside of the plane.
And in this one, he's screaming like that.
But it's the same. I was bored. I was utterly bored by it because it didn't show me something new.
Yeah.
If it was a different performer and that was happening, I wouldn't have been bored.
Yeah.
If it was the same performer and it was a different thing happening, maybe I wouldn't have been bored.
And I don't understand the inclusion of having Russell Crowe in it playing Dr. Jekyll. I just, for me, Russell Crowe is the living embodiment of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I've heard.
You know him personally, do you?
Oh, yeah. Me and him go way back. And just, I don't see how including big names in this film, I mean, obviously that's their plan. They're going to use big names. They're going to use up-and-coming stars that they know of to kind of steamroll this film and really bring the butts in the seats. I'm not a big fan of, seeing a film just based off of who's starring in it and whatnot. The film overall has to be a good, you know, mesh of everything as far as storytelling, acting, music, CGI effects. It has to be a good mesh of everything. And Tom Cruise just can't do that for me anymore. Tom Cruise in anything is just Tom Cruise in it. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's, I'd like to say that the jury's still out and I'm waiting for another trailer, but I kind of wish they would just recast the lead. Honestly, bring back
Brendan Fraser. I'm good with Brendan Fraser.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that either.
I would love Brendan Fraser.
No,
yeah.
I wouldn't know.
He was great.
Well, it was good for what it was, but I think this is a different movie. I don't think that this is that movie.
Bring back the Scorpion King. #The Rock.
Oh, that's a hard no. Okay, moving on.
Last on our list is the film that dropped its trailer this morning, and that is Transformers: The Last Night.
Or on Monday evening during Monday Night Football.
That's true.
Which was 2 days ago.
So the film stars Mark Wahlberg, Josh Duhamel. It's supposed to, honestly, I have no clue what this movie is about. I couldn't even tell you. I'm pretty sure there's a synopsis, but gathering from what I saw from the trailer, I have no flipping clue of what this is trying to do.
Take a bunch of story elements, throw them in a blender, and push pulse a few times, and then dump it out on a plate. That's what this movie is.
That's exactly what Michael Bay probably did. He's like, let's just take all the film cells.
It's like scenes from a hat, but then they actually tried to stitch them together into a movie.
And then they paid Anthony Hopkins to do the monologue in the beginning.
Oh, brother.
I don't understand. So, okay, here's the thing about Michael Bay and Transformers movies. They always look good in the trailer. Previous films.
Well, because he has an excellent eye.
Yeah, he does.
I cannot criticize the man for the way that he looks through the lens of a camera.
True. Very true. I give him that. The man knows how to piece together a property to make it seem appeasing.
It's appealing.
The appealing against of his
camera. He does not appease. Okay. I am at war with him.
Appealing.
From a story standpoint.
However, it is the end result that matters, and it is the end result that does bring in the revenue, and that's the part that falls short for Michael Bay sometimes, in particular this franchise. I feel like, and if you haven't gotten it yet or haven't kind of gathered my pass or fail, this fails for me because of the fact that I have no clue what this film is trying to do. I have no idea what this trailer is trying to do. All I know is this is what I gathered from the trailer. Anthony Hopkins, no Optimus Prime. Yes, Optimus Prime, kill Bumblebee. That's all I got from the trailer. And
yeah, it seems to be positioning Optimus Prime as an antagonist instead of a protagonist.
Yeah, so this one's doing too much.
I.e. a bad guy and not a good guy.
Yeah, so it's a fail for me. I'm sorry.
I'm going to surprise you and give this trailer a pass.
This is the
reason. Okay, this is the reason. I love this. Okay, this trailer... Okay, first of all, story elements seem to be including King Arthur, Nazis, Optimus floating in space, possibly dead, Optimus alive but a bad guy, and potentially the demise of Bumblebee. And then there's also some modern day stuff in there too, because you've got Mark Wahlberg from the previous movie and Josh Duhamel from the original trilogy, presumably not transported back in time into the past, into either World War II times or, you know, the Dark Ages. So who knows what in the world is going on holistically in this film. However, I give this trailer a pass because I believe that it showed me all the things that I would like about the movie, and it convinced me that I don't want to see the movie in its full, you know, in its full length feature film, you know, glory. I am completely content seeing the hot mess that is the trailer and saying, you know what, that's all the stuff I would have liked in it anyway, and all the stuff I probably would have criticized the most. So your job is done. You've told your story in 2 minutes. Thank you very much for not wasting the rest of my time.
So what I'm gathering is that you passed the trailer only for the fact that the trailer gave you all that you needed to know about the film.
That's right.
And I'm failing the trailer because this trailer gave me diddly squat in terms of what I wanted from the film.
That's right, and I don't see those as two mutually exclusive things. I think that we're speaking the same language.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, like I said.
That trailer and the whole topic of that movie is a great thing to move on from.
Tis true. I would agree. Last on our movie list real quick, Damian Lewis is set to play the villain opposite Sandra Bullock and Kate Blanchett's Ocean's 8. Don't ask me what just happened right now. I just
top of the morning to
top
you.
Of the morning to
Sandra
you.
Sandra Bullock, who is not British.
The female-led Ocean's 11 spinoff Ocean's 8 has finally lined up a villain with the former Homeland star Damian Lewis. The actor has been spotted on the Manhattan sets of the film, along with some stunning costume work for the female band of thieves, and Variety has confirmed Lewis will take on the role of the film's central antagonist, who comes up against Sandra Bullock and her band of thieves. Lewis will reportedly play Bullock's ex-lover and the target of her heist. Ocean's 8 is currently in production in New York City, and Warner Brothers has set the release date for June 8th, 2018. So I'm not, I never really saw Homeland, but I am aware of Damian Lewis. I've seen his headshots and whatnot. I've seen a couple clips of him. I know what the man looks
sorry.
Like.
Did you just say that? I've seen pictures of the man.
I've seen what the man looks like. He looks like a villain. I'll say that much. I mean, there's not much.
Okay, wait. So Band of Brothers.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
HBO miniseries. Okay, uh-huh. He was basically the star of the first half of that film, that miniseries,
it's
right?
Been a while since I've
seen that. The TV show Life. Ever seen that?
Mm-mm.
He was the detective who was imprisoned wrongly and then came out and had to try to solve things and win back his credibility, even though he hadn't done the crime. Billions is on the air now. I've not seen that one. That's Paul Giamatti and Damian Lewis. Mm. I think they're stock traders. Yeah, he has, you know, good body of work aside from Homeland, which also was an interesting role because, you know, was he a good guy or a bad guy or something in between? Did we ever find out? We don't know.
Well,
we do know, but anyway.
Yeah.
Now he's the bad guy and he's Sandra Bullock's ex in
True.
Ocean's 8, which actually reminds me a little bit of the plot of Ocean's 11, where Danny Ocean is going after
the ex,
the new boyfriend
current, yeah.
of his ex.
Yes.
Who was played by Julia Roberts. So it's kind of like they took a familiar beat and reworked it to work in this new version. This is positioned, I think, as a companion piece rather than like a reboot. It's not like what they did with Ghostbusters, where they turned it into an all-female Ghostbusters that exists in a universe where the original Ghostbusters did not happen.
No.
This is more like we're running side by side, kind of.
Yeah, Julia Roberts is supposed to have a role in this, which Julia Roberts plays Daniel
Tess.
Ocean's
It's Tess, right?
Yeah, Tess.
Yeah.
So this is definitely in the same universe, and I love the first three, the only three films, and so I'm excited to see this. So, you know, we'll just see how he shapes up and does as a villain.
I mean, he's, you know, British, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
Brits are bad. But
I'm not saying that. Brits are very talented.
But that does bring us to our special presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time of year. And, you know, we love to just talk about holiday films. We love to talk about films of the season, ultimately. I mean, if you couldn't tell from our Halloween specials that we did, the things that we talked about, the things that we brought up, we love to really kind of enjoy the
holiday.
Exactly.
The seasonality.
I'm enjoying the music right now.
There are certain key times of the year that kind of, I don't know, they welcome a familiarity, a sense of the familiar. And I would say, quite frankly, one of those is summer blockbuster season, right? So
going back to that,
the content of the movies might be very different than what you've seen before, but it's something big, expensive, bombastic, adventurous usually, and I think that's good. Holiday season, not really time for those big explosive movies. It's something a little more down to earth,
yep.
usually.
So it's that time of year, the time where we all cuddle around the fire, drink hot cocoa, and watch movies themed around one of the best seasons of them all. That's right, we're talking about Christmas. And if there's one season that we both look forward to each year, it's this one right here.
You are all about the accents today, my friend.
Oh, most definitely. The holidays always seem to exude the best out of humanity, showing us what it means to be joyful, kind, and above all, selfless. Cinema's no different. As we see these great attributes displayed in our community around us, film also shares in showing people who are joyful and kind. But what is it about these films that make them a Christmas film? What exactly defines a holiday film? Well, as the philosophers, it's our duty to get down to the Christmas tree roots and dig deep into that figgy pudding and find out the science in making a holiday movie.
So basically what you're saying is,
yes,
there are certain key components that every holiday movie should have.
True. Very true. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. There are Think of it like a formula. There's a formula.
Uh-oh, you're talking math.
No, chemistry.
You're talking chemistry.
Chemistry, there we go.
Even worse.
There's a certain formula that really helps build a solid holiday film. We all have our favorites. We all have the ones that we love, and we'll talk about that a little later. But they all seem to share some common threads. You take films that have, you know, stood the test of time, films that people watch and are like, oh, this was great. I like this one. This should be a holiday film every year. What is it about that film that makes it a holiday film? Well, we're gonna kind of touch on those.
Now, are you saying what makes it a holiday film or what makes it a good holiday film?
What makes it a holiday film? Now, the difference is, here's a unique thing. What may be a holiday film for me, which kind of rings as a good one or whatever, may not be a good one for you, but it's still a holiday film. So we're not talking about kind of, you know, the tidbits and the very nitty gritty, you know, deep down into it as far as what makes a good one as opposed to a bad one. We're just talking about what makes a film a holiday film. Now, obviously, you could have a movie about Santa, but it may not be about the, you know, the holiday season. It may have Santa in it, but just because you have that particular, you know, piece of the puzzle in it doesn't necessarily make it.
So you're looking for something a little more complex than, well, isn't that an easy answer? Mistletoe, Christmas tree, snow, reindeer, elves, Santa, that Frosty.
But that could also be a like a wildlife
family dinner.
That could be a wildlife documentary for me. That sounds like
That sounds like a personal issue.
So
you're looking for something a little more refined,
yeah,
than the obvious answers.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did our research, and we wanted to really find what you could take out as far as from most of the holiday films and really kind of break it down to its bare bones. What exactly do we consider, what makes up the consistencies of our holiday films? What do we see, what makes up the films that we consider holiday films? You follow?
I'm working on it. I'm thinking something. My brain is in a very simple mode right now. I'm like, so you're saying not necessarily the things that are on 25 Days of Christmas on Freeform?
Hallmark? No.
Or not necessarily what airs on the Hallmark Channel because it's about the holiday times. That's not good enough.
No,
to qualify as a holiday film.
We're talking
about something on a higher level.
We're looking at something that anybody can use in terms of defining the films that they love during the Christmas season and see if it falls into the holiday film format.
Well, why don't you tell us what the formula is?
Certainly. So,
do tell.
First things first, you take two parts classic. Now, the word classic has its roots in two Latin words, classis and classicus. Classis referred to the five levels that Roman society was divided into. Classicus was the highest of these five films, or these five classes. Thus, a classic is something at the top or in first place. So just so we can lay the woodwork down, that's where the term classic came from.
To qualify as a holiday film, it must have two parts of classic.
Yes, and I'll explain why too. So not all classics, because most of the time if you think classics, what immediately pops into your head?
Black and white.
You think, you know, older films. You think films that belong back in like the 50s and 60s, things that, you know, you normally see around a group of like family members and things of that sort. Not all classics though have to be old. Sometimes a movie comes along that people consider an instant classic. Take, for instance, it was like mid-90s movie with Tim Allen, Santa Claus. Some people consider that an instant classic because of the fact that it's about the holiday season and it really speaks to a lot of people in terms of, you know, that, you know, family separation kind of deal and dealing with that and, you know, with Santa Claus included in that and a lot of other elements, it becomes an instant classic for some households. You also take other films like Jingle All the Way. Jingle All the Way is another one that becomes a classic. It's not old, but people love it because of the fact that it resonates with people.
I know you're going to get some comments about this one because I know there are some people that don't consider Jingle All the Way to be a classic.
Well, you know, it's very...
I enjoy it. I'm not judging you. I enjoy the film. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, going after the whatever the action figure is, and then
Turbo Man.
Yeah, becoming Turbo Man for the holiday parade and all that. I mean, come on. What's not to love there?
Exactly.
But I'm sure there are a number of people who would say that is not a classic film.
Well, and that's their own opinion. And that's the great thing about having their own opinion, because it's all theirs. Even though it's newer, people love it so much that they immediately know that it will be one of those timeless films that people will love for years to come. So the two parts is whether if it's an older classic or a newer classic, that's what the two parts are.
So it doesn't have to have two parts of classic. It has to be one part of classic that is either old or new.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Next on the list, speaking of timeless, the next part of the formula is you add in one part of timelessness. Now, a sense of timelessness, or the fact that many people have enjoyed a work over time and continue to enjoy it many years later, contributes greatly to something being considered a holiday film. Now, I know we were talking about how classics, you know, don't really have an age. Timelessness doesn't either. Timelessness is based on the idea of how many times you watch the movie or how frequently. So you take a film such as It's a Wonderful Life. Obviously, that has become
arguably the most timeless film ever made.
Exactly. So people who have seen that film, they like that film. They like to watch that film. They watch it year after year after year after year, even sometimes outside of the holiday season, which is fine. That's what makes it a holiday, a timeless holiday film. And then you take a film like Scrooged. We have a particular friend of ours who loves this film, and he makes an attempt to watch it every year. Now, it's not exactly as old as
It's a Wonderful Life.
But it's still a film that he consistently sees as often as he can and as much as he can. And it becomes a timeless film for him. A timeless film pulls in its attributes from folklore, traditional stories, books, and plays. So sometimes most holiday films, the timelessness does play an effect as far as where they draw their story from, where they get their story from. And It's a Wonderful Life was based on a story. Obviously, the Christmas Carol film, that's based on a story. You have a lot of these films that are either based on stories, plays, traditional folklore, stories that people told around campfires, things of that sort. And that delves into the richness of, you know, heritage and things of that sort of people. Timelessness also lends itself for holiday films to become part of the cultural landscape. If many people can easily quote or at least recognize famous lines from a book or movie, it's probably a timeless tale. So being able to remember, I mean, if you're watching something, what is a film that you remember that you could probably quote word for word?
Gladiator.
So because of that, that lends to the idea of it being a timeless film. Obviously, you've seen it enough times to be able to have recognized and remembered most of those lines. If somebody were to speak a line from the film, you'd be like, oh, that was from Gladiator. That was in the third act with what's his name?
Yeah, it's one of the rare films that I actually remember stuff like that from.
So that lends itself as well to a holiday film being timeless. So we got two parts being classic and one part being timeless.
You have two options under classic.
Yes.
And you have... So you have classic, you have timeless. Now, it's interesting, though, because I think a lot of people would equate those things. It's classic because it's timeless versus them as two different things. So I find it very interesting to distinguish them, and I think that there's an argument to be made for distinguishing them, because I think classic also can be reflective of something like, for example, the story structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be a memento, mm-hmm. right? Memento does not follow a story structure, like a traditional story structure, beginning, middle, end. It's actually in reverse and therefore a lot more complicated. So I would say that Memento, while it is an extremely intelligently made film and very compelling, I like it, I wouldn't call it a classic film because it doesn't follow a classic structure. I would say classic also could talk about the story elements within the story, within the screenplay. That would be things that you're used to seeing in other types of films. So even something like Elf, for example,
mm-hmm.
right? Very, it's a modern fable set during, you know, Christmas time. And it's winsome and funny and enjoyable. As long as you're not one of those folks who, you know, just really doesn't like the humor in it. Some people don't like humor that doesn't stop. They like little blips of humor, but not like, okay, stop trying to be funny. Just tell me the story. So some people might not like that movie. However, I would argue that that movie does have a classic story structure. Even though it's set in the modern day, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yes.
And it definitely follows the same kind of pattern we would expect from other types of movies that don't fall within the holiday genre.
True. And that of course, like you said, it does lend itself to that argument of some people. And mind you, this is our list. This is what we've compiled and so forth. And if you do have your own, you know, formula or how-so, please let us know. Drop us a line on Facebook.com and we'd love to chat with you about it. The last piece of our grand puzzle here is one part universal message. So holiday films often deal with universal issues about human nature that everybody can relate to. Holiday films that teach important life lessons in a way that touches the heart often achieve their status because of their lasting significance over time. So like we were saying, the Santa Claus movie, that one has a very lasting impression on a lot of people because of the fact of its ability to translate the idea of love amongst a family and really perpetuates the idea of still having parents in your life even after they've divorced. That's a really great universal message. You take other films like we were saying, the classic, It's a Wonderful Life. You know, hey, you are loved, you are cherished.
Your life matters.
Your life matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a great universal message. When a holiday film can achieve that, that's when it becomes a true holiday film, in my eyes. What do you think?
I don't disagree with you. I think that these attributes could be used to describe films that have nothing to do with the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's got to be an X factor. We got to have some low-hanging fruit of some sort. It's set during Christmas time. Or you know, if we're talking just holidays, it's set during Easter or Thanksgiving or Halloween. Or, you know, like it's a holiday film because it's intentionally meant to connect to a certain type of celebration or time of the year or atmosphere of festivity. I think there does have to be, you know, to fit within the holiday genre, I think you do need some kind of an explicit connection to whatever that holiday is.
Well, then I guess the last part is it has to be filmed around Christmas time.
In this case, yes.
Yeah.
This particular holiday, it needs to be set during Christmas time. Oftentimes, you know, you look at these movies and it's so funny to hear, you know, stories from behind the scenes on the set.
Uh-huh.
Because they're made to be distributed during Christmas time, which means they're produced in, you know, June, in like the heat of the summer, and they're in a slightly air conditioned sound studio or whatever, but they're all bundled up in their sweaters and they've got their roaring fire in the fireplace. And, you know, like I'm sure that, you know, for the performers, it's a little bit jarring because they're having these staged holiday experiences outside of the time period that they would naturally experience them, because they're, you know, the production schedule demands that you give the editors more than a day to throw everything together.
True.
So it's interesting because a lot of these films actually are filmed earlier in the year.
That is very true. But these, and like Chad said, this list, this formula, it does kind of have a sense of universal, you know, fixture for itself. It can be utilized in any way. This is specifically for in reference to our holiday films and how we see those. But speaking of holiday films, we are actually going to do,
it's the final countdown.
A final countdown. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to try to do a final count.
It's the final
Man, that guy really rips it up. We're going to try to do a final countdown. You know, in honor of the holiday season, we decided to reach deep into our minds and pull out those great memories that we've had and shared with others around the soft glow of either the TV screen or the big screen. We're going to list out our top three holiday films that mean the most to us. So here's to our Filmlosopher's final countdown. So it's a top three list. Should be simple enough. We're going to go ahead and...
That's what you think.
Yes. We're going to start at the very top in third place and work our way down to our most memorable and probably favorite holiday film.
I have to say, the whole subject of holiday films just brings a smile to my face. And maybe it's because I'm really tired while we're recording this. And maybe it's just because it makes me very happy. I just like talking about holiday movies. If this was summertime and we were talking about holiday movies, I'd be like, okay, awesome, they're cool, moving on. Because that's not what summer's for. But because, you know, it's that time of year and they're all over the television and some of them are in the movie theaters, sort of, I'm just, like, overjoyed. I'm so happy. I can't believe that Christmas is already here again, the Christmas season.
Mm-hmm.
However, every time it rolls around, I'm very excited that it's back.
True. So as we go through this top three countdown, we're going to go ahead and start the list off with number three. And would you like to take the honors?
Sure.
Go ahead.
So my number three is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the claymation version.
Okay.
Right? Not just the song, but I remember as a very young child watching it, and we would watch it every year, and I still most years watch it, maybe. At least every other year, I still see it once. My favorite part of the film is Yukon Cornelius, the prospector who's going around trying to find silver and gold. And he hacks his pickaxe into the ice and then pulls it out and licks at it. When I was a kid, I was just like, that is the stupidest, funniest thing. You're going to find a trend, by the way, in my choices.
It's sounding like
Really enjoy characters that go a little off the beaten path.
I can see
in a
that.
Humorous way. I really, really enjoy that.
Well, mine's not too far off from yours. Mine is actually Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I like the opening with Fred Astaire and... the story about where Santa Claus comes from. I like the idea of, the whole put one foot in front of the other.
Oh, right. The weather wizard guy or whatever.
So I'm a big fan of that one. So I'd say that's my number three. Yeah, I really enjoy that. I was one of those ones that was always on the TV. And at one point in time, I think my parents actually bought the VHS tape and we would see it at home as well. And I don't remember seeing much of Rudolph, though. Honestly, weird. But I remember this one being more prevalent on TV than the Rudolph one. So maybe that's probably why this one made my third place.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, those claymation Christmas movies, many people, I won't say most, I don't want to presume, but many people have seen at least one of them probably numerous times.
Your number two spot.
Number two goes back to the music you were playing earlier at the top of the segment. Not the countdown segment, but the Christmas segment, the holiday film segment, A Charlie Brown Christmas.
That's your number two?
That's my number two. It's on the air every year. We watch it every year. This one I do know I see every year. And I enjoy it. The thing that sticks out to me in this one, well, there are two things. There's the serious one, which is when Linus tells the story of the birth of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And I love that kid. Linus is amazing. With his blanket and yet all of his intelligence and all of his maturity. I think that it left an impression on me when I was very young that when you're young, you don't have to be immature. You can understand things that adults would talk about and it can mean something to you. And so that meant something to me and I always enjoyed it. Of course, you've also got, Snoopy kissing Lucy and she's getting mad at him and Charlie Brown picking the tiny little tree and all that. I think the other thing that always has stuck out to me is the way the kids dance.
Oh my gosh.
In their unstructured quote unquote rehearsal time when they're not actually rehearsing for the Christmas play. They're just having fun. We know some of them are shaking their heads back and forth. Some of them are, shrugging their shoulders and turning side to side. I
I don't know why. I could watch that sequence on endless repeat.
I'm pretty sure they have it somewhere.
Probably on YouTube. Like a day before I actually got tired of it. I've always enjoyed it. I don't know why.
Well, I can't believe that's your number two. My number two is actually my wife's number one favorite, which is Christmas Vacation. I didn't like this. I'm going to be frank with you guys. I didn't really like this film come 5 years ago. I wasn't a fan of it. I didn't really care too much about it. I wasn't a National Lampoon. I believe it's National Lampoon.
Yeah, it is.
I wasn't a National Lampoon fan. But then I met my wife, and go figure, my wife's Salvadoran, and her favorite, you know, holiday film is Christmas Vacation. And so she loves this film, and so I started watching it with her out of just like, okay, I'll watch it with you, whatever.
Husbandly duties, right?
Well, and then I started finding myself actually liking the movie. And so I was like, oh, this is a pretty funny stuff. Chevy Chase was the man, you know? He was the man.
I don't know about it anymore, but he was the man.
He's just hilarious. And you know, what's his name? His brother, cousin, or his cousin Eddie, and all them. It makes for a really great.
Just like him because he shares a name with you.
That too as well. I mean, we both look the same when I'm outside in my robe and my hat and, you know, trying to drain the. So, yeah. Oy. So that's my.
Hey. So that's your number two.
That's my number two. And Chadley for the number one first place spot.
I am so happy to share this because most people do not know what I'm talking about when I talk about this movie. My number one goes to a made-for-TV Christmas special.
I know what you're going to say.
From Jim Henson Company from 1987. It's a film called A Muppet Family Christmas.
Now, this is not to be confused with Muppet Christmas Carol.
Right. This movie, made-for-TV, this movie combines The Muppets.
Yes, it does.
Sesame Street and Fraggle Rock all together in one film. So it's the story of Fozzie Bear is bringing all of the Muppets, right? So Sesame Street is, they're all considered Muppets for television, right? And Fraggle Rock was kind of an offshoot, but they're considered Muppets as well, the yes. Muppet brand.
They're from Jim Henson.
And so, yeah, anything from Jim Henson Studios is considered one of the Muppets. I'm on the fence about Dark Crystal. I'm not sure about those characters, but, you know. Anyway, so Fozzie Bear has invited all of the Muppets to come to his mother's house for Christmas, while his mother, meanwhile, is about to leave for a trip to Aruba, I believe. Mm-hmm. And as she's about to leave on her, you know, tropical Christmas vacation, here comes Fozzie and all of his weirdo friends. And they are sleeping on, like, hooks in a closet, and they're everywhere, and they're zany. Here's the reason why I love this movie. And I know you won't be surprised. Most people who know me well won't be surprised.
I'm already knowing where you're going
with this. One of my favorites, speaking of, like, oddball zany characters whom I love, one of my favorite ever in the history of ever, this will never change, is the Swedish Chef. The Swedish Chef is my favorite Muppet in history and will always be. Because I love the way he talks. I love the way he somewhat seems to think. And in this movie, this made-for-TV movie, it has some of my absolute favorite moments with the Swedish Chef in them. I mean, he's trying to... There's a turkey that's been invited that's alive still that he's, like, measuring for the pan. And then the turkey convinces him not to try to cook him, but look out there. And he sees Big Bird, and he throws the roasting pan behind him. And, I mean, it has some of the best moments. It gives me joy every time. I do watch this one every year. Thank you to my cousin Justin, who once got me the DVD, because otherwise I would have had to try to unearth that old used VHS tape and use it and get it stuck in the VCR. You know, you young ones don't even know what I'm talking about. That's old technology. But
VCR, what's that?
Truly... They sing, they dance, they do a whole Christmas play in this thing. The only thing that's distracting about it is when you hear, obviously, the performers' voice characters within the Muppets and Sesame Street and Fraggle Rock. So yeah. Sometimes when you're only listening, you can hear, like, wait a minute, that's Kermit's voice coming out of Ernie, you know,
yeah,
from Sesame Street, because the vocal performer is the same. So there's a little bit there that's a little confusing, but I've gone on too long, but I can't say enough. I love this movie.
So
again, A Muppet Family Christmas, not A Muppet Christmas Carol, which is also phenomenal.
Yes, and actually, to be quite frank, my number one holiday Christmas movie is Muppet Christmas Carol.
See those Muppets? They've got they've got the corner on the holiday market.
I love that film. I love Michael Caine in that role. I love him playing Scrooge, Kermit playing Bob Cratchit, and I love the entire feel of the film, including all the people that are great already in the Muppet show and all that, and incorporating them in such a timeless tale. It's an awesome movie, and I love watching it every year. I had it on VHS, and then the VHS tape broke, and then I had to get it on DVD, and the DVD broke, and then I ended up having to download it for free on it was some platform on the PS3, so it's on the PS3 forever, thank God. But I absolutely love the film. The film is always a reminder of earlier times when I was younger. We would always watch it. It was always on TV. Growing up in San Antonio, The Muppet Christmas Carol was always on every year. And go figure, it was always preceded with Dennis the Menace. I don't know why, but that was always the film that came after The Muppet Christmas Carol. I have no idea. But that is absolutely one of my most favorite holiday
Your parents
films.
Were trying to send you a message.
Oh, yeah, that I'm a Muppet.
How did Scrooge become the way he became? Because he started out as somebody like Dennis the Menace. Don't be like him.
It's true.
They didn't want you to get into hijinks and shenanigans.
Well, that about wraps up another awesome show from the film Lostpers. And like we said, if you have your own formula, if you believe that our formula is right or if it's wrong, please shoot us a message on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlostpers or drop us a tweet on Twitter. At twitter.com/filmlostpers101.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and share your own top three holiday films? Because there are so many out there.
There are tons.
And quite a few of them are actually really enjoyable.
Yeah, there may be some that we've like totally missed out on growing up in our childhood that maybe you remember fully as in your childhood. And we'd love to hear about them.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about it and to go check them out.
So before we go, we're going to leave you with a little movie quote. Jim Henson, the great puppeteer and just creator of all this awesomeness, once said, "When I was young, my ambition was to be one of the people who made a difference in this world. My hope is to leave the world a little better for having been there." So, you know, and kudos to him.
Mission accomplished.
Exactly.
Brother.
You know, he's gone on and he's left quite a legacy, as you can tell by, you know, our top picks. But this was a great show, great conversation, and we had an awesome time. I know you were half asleep, but you know what?
Asleep, but I'm half asleep with a smile on my face.
There you go. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I am Chad.
We are sending you with a holiday class dismissed.